Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Mr. Sharad Chupran, how are you today?
I'm very good, and I think we are creating another expertise in fintech. This is what, the sixth or seventh fintech company that we've had in
probably in this season only, right? I mean, I think overall we must have had at least like 20.
Yeah.
If not more. And
our guest would be thrilled to know that a lot of their names had some form of fin in them, either in the beginning or in the end. But
our guest obviously belongs to the same bucket. Please welcome Shreyans Nahar from FinSire. Hey Shreyans, how's it going, man?
Going well, Nicholas. Going well. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. It's good to have you. And start by just understanding a little bit about FinSire. We understand it's positioned as a tech company with infrastructure rails that are sort of being designed for eventual underwriters, I guess. Is that sort of a shorter version of what you guys are trying to do?
I mean, the first half of it, yes, which is the infrastructure and building the lending rails, right? The core thesis and the ethos of FinSire essentially is to build these lending rails for secure digital assets, right? I put a digital assets there. It's funny because the crypto funds would say, oh, this is our land, but it's not that, their land. Essentially, it means is that anything that potentially that you see around in the form of an asset, and what is an asset, especially if there's a lender to it and if there's an underwriter to it, and if someone accepts it in the form of an asset and takes it and grows it, that's potentially an asset, right? So if that can be digitized, and some of them are already digitized, some of them are still in form of hard assets like say land, gold, so on and so forth. So it can be digitized, and there can be APIs that flock around and an end eventual lender or an asset or and an asset originator and an end borrower can get connected through an API. I mean, that's the job, right? So eventually they can take the credit within like no time and obviously, we pay the credit within no time, so on and so forth. So the whole hazard of what a hard asset would do with a document, with operational cost, with the operational inefficiency, so on and so forth, can easily be done in a very digitizable manner. So that's what we do.
Yeah.
Right? So we see these assets and then eventually integrate.
Yeah, could you?
Yeah, it's interesting in a way that most of the, a lot of the fintech companies that we've spoken to of late have been on the unsecured underwriting side of things, right? Cash flow-based underwriting. This is sort of a tech play on creating infrastructure around collaterals, around security, right? So it's sort of secured lending or position, trying to push the secured lending forward, right? So that's something different. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, so here's what it is, right? There have been a lot of models, there have been a lot of plays, but just to understand the whole demographics of how India is and the way it's structured, right? It actually goes back to the origins of say, how my granddad himself started accounting, right? Actually, very funnily, he was a farmer when he was 16. Actually, he moved to from Rajasthan to Chennai with his wife, who was 12 then. And essentially, he wanted to basically start off as a merchant, right? Sell whatever he's done for 6 months in the farmland and come here and sell. But the way he actually had realized that there were no lenders at that point of time who potentially could lend on his produce, right, or whatever he's done, and that made little to no sense, right? The banks were pretty much not lending to farmers, no NBFCs of sort. So he started off as pawnbroking in a secured way, right? So he said, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to kind of, call up these other farmers to Chennai who were, farmland. And then he basically used to lend on their produce. So that's where the secured lending actually starts, right? And eventually, when you think of it, secured lending is probably the backbone of any sort of lending in across any geographies, right? When you talk about unsecured, is where very few people would take it in smaller chunks, right? The ticket size would tend to be a lot smaller, so on and so forth. Secured lending is actually what makes up the economy and breaks the economy also sometimes, right? Like 07, 08 is the perfect example of this, right? CMBS that led to a very tripling down effect. So the way we think of it is that if secured lending could be done in an easy way as unsecured is done, I mean, why not, right? Mm-hmm. The ball actually is in the borrower's court then. What I mean by that is that the interest rate or the loan duration or the LTV, all of it is actually in the borrower's court if it could be done in a very easy API way, in an API way where the transfer of data, the transfer of the asset, the asset pledging and depledging can be done in a very seamless way. then geez, I would not take an unsecured loan and choke myself up with that 16.25, whatever percent. I would not take up that because I have the asset put and being pledged, and I'm getting probably rates which are much lower, loan duration which are much higher, and the LTV which is much, much higher. And I would probably continue doing that forever. Right? Yeah. So that's the thesis of it. And that makes up the economy. When you think of India, India has about $10 trillion worth of assets. When every time it's usually three times the economy in almost all countries. When you think of it, it has a $10 trillion worth of assets. But today, I'm not able to pledge any of these assets in a very easy way.
Yeah.
So whatever can eventually be digitized, our notional thought is that can we build these rails where I can pledge, depledge very easily and seamless way?
Yeah.
Shez, I think a good way to understand this and also for our listeners would be if you can, you know, walk through like a specific use case. I mean, and you know, how FinShare kind of intervenes within that scenario.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah, I mean, so the way we think of it, and the way, you know, we've obviously realized is obviously there are a bunch of use cases across the whole horizon of secure lending, right? Today, there are a few companies that have solved really well with respect to, say, gold loans, so on and so forth, but it's still a hard asset, right? And a hard asset means that it has its own challenges. I mean, not to say that hard asset has not been done, the gold loan or lending has not been done in the right way. It's obviously done in a very beautiful way. And that's the first form of decentralization of lending or secure lending, right? What banks used to do traditionally, or what my granddad, you know, still does 70 years now in pawnbroking way, it's still there. But obviously, there are a lot of challenges in its own ways, right? So I'll probably first break down those challenges and tell you what is there in that environment and how, you know, it's getting changed over a period of time, right? So over a period of... so. Ever since post-independence, how it has worked essentially is that, you know, there have been few institutions, banks, obviously, and these banks only used to govern how kind of, you know, lending used to work in both secured and unsecured way. The way secured way it used to work was obviously very straightforward way. You kind of give out your asset, and based on that asset, they would probably do their proof checks, be it land, be it gold, be it other forms of jewelry, be it vehicle, be it agri land, so on and so forth, right? So what they used to do, they used to check these assets. They used to check how kind of, you know, legit these assets were, or legit these documents were that were given out. And obviously to realize that, they would probably, you know, do their own, you know, checks. Now on these checks, the problems were essentially that it's super operationally heavy, right? Like the cost is supremely high. You know, people would probably take their own time to do their checks. Second is that there's less transparency involved in it, right? What I mean by that is that gold, sometimes the purity would vary. There would be a lot of differences. Land documents would be fudged. There'd be multiple people having multiple documents. As I myself, like, you know, my family, they would have faced a lot of issues with respect to multiple people actually owning different kinds of land documents. Vehicle, that actually would be, you know, the RC book variations would be there, so on and so forth. So hard asset obviously has had its own challenges, right, over a period of time, which is why we were actually very wary of doing something of that sort. And over a period of time, of course, the centralization involved in this was supremely high with respect to the lenders. Now, what I mean by centralization, right, there would be one lender out there who would govern, and you know, it can be any sort of a big bank, who would govern the interest rate that you get on that. Who would govern that LTV that you would get on that, right? Loan to value. Who would govern the loan duration of that asset, so on and so forth, right? I mean, and obviously the borrower would say, geez, if I'm getting like, you know, 50% LTV for my land that I give or the property that I give, it's a very bad deal for me. I might as well not give it, right? Or if I get like, you know, 60%, I might as well not give it on that particular gold because gold will appreciate. What if I default and that, you know, the lender kind of keeps the gold of sorts, right? Which is why few startups over the last decade, right, and I'd probably take the name someone like Rupee, actually had decentralized this, right, to say that, you know, they've done really well in forms of how they have changed the, you know, have made the banks dance on their tunes, right, to say that, you know, now today it would not be just a bank that potentially could give out this, but also say someone like a startup who's supremely customer-friendly, who's supremely user-driven, to say that, you know, I'll come to your place, take this gold, put it in the locker, and then do that. But obviously has its own operational costs involved in it, so on and so forth, right? The next form of it is obviously the whole digital form of it, that way, the way we think eventually would get there, right? So all of it, hard assets, was done very beautifully. Now it's a digital form of it. that eventually slowly is getting there. I mean, 5 years ago, even stocks would not be done this way. Even life insurance would not be done this way until date, right? To the idea to think of it that even for stocks, you will probably you would have had to go and give out your, you know, DMAT shares that you have converted in a document, and then, you know, kind of and this across all different brokers that you go check it, and across different brokers, once you check it, what happens is that, you know, they'll add up that stock and then they'll give you that LTV. So that's only one asset that I'm talking about from different brokers, right? And there are multiple other assets also, say something like a mutual fund or life insurance of sorts, right? Which still, you know, life insurance still works in that form where you need to give a document, a private bank would ensure that you get a credit to that in about 11 days, a public bank does in 15 days. And that's a ridiculous time to say that to get credit or liquidity for the asset that you yourself own, right? It shouldn't be that way. Right. So the way we think of it is that how can we democratize this whole functionality of it, right? And I'm just going to take a plain vanilla use case involved in this, right? I'm not even going to take the heavy jargon financial use case that we have in-house. The plain vanilla use case that all of us use multiple different applications of that, right? It can, you know, it can be a payment application that we use every day. It can be, you know, a stockbroking app that we use every day, right. Or it can be as simple as you know, any digital touch point that we have on our device. Now, as a user, I have been associated with this application or the device for the longest, right? So can it be that me going into some app like, say, Nipopay, right, or say whatever, Google Pay or sort, and they have this functionality where I can just directly put out my number and as I put my number with the consensus of an OTP, can it be that I can pull out all the assets that I hold, which are obviously digitized, right? There's something like the stocks, mutual funds, or life insurance that are digitized. Can I see it and view it at one-stop shop? I mean, nothing of that sort exists, right? Today, I'll have to do it with one asset itself. I have to do it with five brokers. So I'm talking about, you know, another asset doing another two other brokers. So I go on Ipopay, I put out a number, I put out an OTP. And once I do that, I see a purview of all the assets at once. And then I get a choice of pledging whichever particular asset I want, or whichever assets, or whichever stock, mutual fund, or insurance I want specifically. And then basically, you know, with my consent, again, it gets kind of, you know, verified, pledged, and then a lender gets to see it at the back end of it. And once the lender sees it at the back end of it, that asset gets pledged with that particular lender, and a certain LTV / credit is flushed out to the borrower's ecosystem directly connected with the Ipopay. Right. So as simple as that.
So yeah, it's like you kind of making it like a more of a feature kind of a thing, right? I mean, it's almost like a feature lending, right? That it's plug and play. So is it a correct characterization to say that primarily, financial assets, something which kind of form a core to your offering, because they are by nature, most of them are digitized, and then it becomes more a question of aggregation and integration? Or you would also like say, look at more traditional assets like, I don't know, say I have a house or a car. I mean, the kind of examples that you mentioned earlier, obviously they are also kind of backed by documentation, but the documentation may not be like the base architecture of digitization may not have touched that as much as say a stock or a mutual fund, which obviously is, you know, backed in a depository or in DMAT or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, so the way we think of this, which is why, you know, there are two ways to think of it, right? And even in tech, a lot is philosophical to understand this. Either you go for fame or you go for innovation. Fame is where you create your own distribution. You tell the world that, boss, see, I'm here already. And then the distribution trend tends to follow you, right? Or you go for innovation, right? Clearly that, you know, you want to digitize all of these assets at the back end of it and continue working hard with these asset originators or depositories to digitize this at the forefront, right? Yeah. We have actually taken the latter. We have decided and we've said to ourselves that, boss, we are not going to go for fame. Right. We are not going to create this brand to say that, okay, we are going to go out there and acquire these customers or distribution of sorts. We are going to focus on digitizing as many assets that we can at the end of the day. Now, here's a challenge, right? This is a proper, you know, kind of a mammoth challenge. It's not an easy challenge. This is a challenge to say that you have to, you know, kind of awaken all of these asset originators separately, because each and every asset has its own asset originator or a distributor,
right?
Or a depository, yeah. Right? Like say for something like a mutual fund, it'll be a CAMS. For something like a stocks, it'll be NSDL, CDSL. For something like insurance, it'll be different insurance companies. Yeah. For something like land, it'll be the state's registrar office that potentially has these land documents. Correct. For something like a vehicle, it'll probably be the brand that potentially knows your details of sorts. So every asset has its own asset originator, right? And for every asset originator, ideally, you'll have to go and digitize them and get them on board with the forefront of the API. And we are okay to do that, right? We've already started that whole process that things have not been digitized, to go digitize them so that every other check can happen later. But the first form of verification of knowing that, say, Nikhil or if you may hold any asset, can I see it or can I pledge it ASAP?
Yeah.
That doesn't work today anywhere across. Right.
Yeah.
So our thought is that just to digitize it first and get it forefront and then pledging, depledging, so that any lender out there can see that you might hold this and you want to take a quick credit on that with your own terms is what we want to do over a period of time.
Interesting. And once you sort of get that extraction phase, right, of actually sending, getting the consent of the user, and you get access to the digital footprint or asset footprint that potential borrower has, and when you sort of share that data with the lender, do you sort of get involved in the underwriting process that the lender might have? And the reason I ask is, I mean, let's say there are two guys, like for like 1 lakh in mutual funds, right? Let's say guy one has three small cap stocks in it. The other guy has a fully diversified large cap fund. Both are valued at 1 lakh as of today. I mean, those two show very different volatility trends, right? And will have different pricing mechanisms when you're sort of actually underwriting against that. Do you sort of get into that process as well? Or is that entirely sort of, lenders got two guys, he or she will sort of take that data and make their own, run it through their internal algorithm. So where does your role stop when it comes to that essentially?
Sure. So, I mean, as much as you'd love to be involved, obviously, if you're involved, there's a credit risk on the book. But obviously, because it's secured asset, it's not much credit risk, right? Like, at the end of the day, you'd probably think that the reason why we also think as secured digitizing is that it is as seamless as an unsecured, right?
Sure.
So, basically, there's no risk for the lender and the borrower also has benefits of it. We are not involved in it, although we do have a certain number of models that recommend the lenders in-house that, you can give a certain LTV for it. You can give this is the volatility involved in it, the VAR involved in it. This is the mix that the profile of the lender, this is the existing profile of the lenders, with respect to a lot of data points that we pull out from a lot of resources to say his salary or his, where does he work? Does he work in a CAT, BCAT, or does she work in a CAT, BCAT, C company of sorts, or the
Sorry, just to sort of cut you there. The salary, when we talk about salary, right, like we're sort of moving towards cash flow-based underwriting, right? I mean, those are future stream of cash flows. Those are not really assets. So how does that sort of tie in with the underwriting decision?
I mean, so here's the thing, and it's a very beautiful thing to understand. So this is how finance works, right? So there are two things when someone actually takes a credit. What do you see? Do you see the way he or she owns the asset? Or do you see the way he or she has the ability to pay for that credit? The latter, right? I mean, I might own the asset, but if I just chill around and not do much in life and, kind of expect that asset to be a null asset or create an NPA out there, you're just going to create kind of NPAs out there, right? You're not doing a good job. In fact, you're breaking the economy then, right? Like to understand that, he or she has no resources to pay despite owning that asset. I mean, you'd ideally want a borrower which potentially owns an asset, right, gets great terms for his or her for taking the loan for it, as well as has the ability, smallest, need not be a large ability, right? Even if someone owns a 30K and owns a life insurance of, say, 6 lakhs and wants to pledge their life insurance of worth 6 lakhs and take an LTV for that, your loan terms would be created under that 30K salary that you have.
Understood.
And you have the ability to repay as well. So that's where it comes in, right?
Yeah.
So credit in general are just these two things, right? For the end borrower. And for the end lender is just the risk, right? So which is where this gets negated. The risk gets negated for the end lender and for the end borrower, the ability to repay.
Yeah, no, very interesting. In terms of digital assets, I mean, stocks and mutual funds are probably like the most obvious intuitive ones, if you will. And I guess gold, digital gold, and then you sort of move to that direction, right? I mean, those are the kind of products you're talking
about. Yeah, so there are a bunch of it, right? I mean, a few things actually, when you whole horizon of it. I mean, this blew my mind. I used to, you know, kind of, and again, I take back to my past experience to say that, you know, that for the first 3 years, I used to do a lot of risk models, and this all overseas. I essentially left the country, having been through the whole credit sort of a family of being pawnbrokers of sort. I left the country, not joining the family business for various reasons, and then, you know, eventually got into risk, right? I got into risk only because I loved the whole ideology of saying that, okay, what risk can be? And of course, to earn in dollars, to be honest, right? I'll just be very bluntly honest. I wanted to kind of earn in dollars, and I just left the country then. So the first 3 years I did risk. And then when I went to the US, I had this crazy opportunity to actually, you know, kind of work with Steen van Leeuwenberg, who basically, you know, had done a bunch of things with the Norwegian, $1 trillion Norwegian fund. And built a lot of models. Then I realized this whole ideology that how, you know, kind of structured finance or securitization of various assets work, right? Yeah. Especially CMBS, CDOs, so on and so forth. And when you realize a country that, like the US, with you know, economy being, say, whatever, $22 trillion, at that point of time, they actually have like assets worth easily 4x in that country, household worth of assets. I mean, that blew my mind. So I, at that point of time, I was actually checking, okay, if India was at 3 trillion of sorts, how much assets do we hold? How much assets does the household hold, right?
Yeah.
And that was a mammoth 10 trillion. To realize this $10 trillion worth of assets cannot be digitized so easily, that blew my mind, right? Today, bankers themselves probably, you know, take heck lot of time, despite me owning so much of these assets, for giving me the liquidity that I probably need to get, you know, even without kind of, you know, asking, you know, without answering so many questions of sorts, right? So ideally, I stumbled upon this, right? India is this land of assets and scarce of liquidity. And that's actually very, right? And just to realize that, I knew, so we could actually now get mutual funds and stocks, and but still there's a lot of broken pieces involved with respect to stocks. And then, you know, to realize that there's something called, you know, something digital in digital gold space, life insurance also, some of it is actually broken. How do we fix that? And a bunch of other assets that actually eventually would awaken a lot more, you know, kind of liquidity in the system only if regulators and asset originators are up for this, right? Like I can say something like a PF tomorrow, right? I do know a lot of army men who wait for their PFs every once in a quarter and finish up their liquidity, say in one and a half months. And then the next 1.5 months, actually they wait for the money to come.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea is that how can we work around and get this done, right? The next, you know, ideal scenario would be, you know, if we can work around bonds to do in a very seamless way, or even the fact that even in FD, right, when the proportion of Indians who have an FD is actually very, very high.
Yeah.
But the problem is that the FD back credit that is there currently is a very non-structured way. How it is today is that, you know, if I have to give an FD back credit, and if some company is offering it today as a forefront of it, they expect the end user to break their existing FD and join their bank's FD to give a credit line of it, right? Like, so if I hold in Axis, I will have to break that Axis's FD credit, come into HDFC's FD, this thing, and then they'll give me a credit on it. And that system is actually broken. So eventually every asset that is out there, that can be digitized itself is a lot more. And then over a period of time, of course, we do see, and I'm hopeful about it, that, you know, other assets like, say, a land or a gold, that hard asset of gold would get, you know, numbered, and then even that can be digitized so that, you know, I have it. And then eventually the operational can be done, but the first form of it is actually pledging and
pledging. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing that when you mentioned the example of the FD, I mean, I assume that the banks insist on having an FD within their own setup is because it makes recourse easier for them, right? How would you solve that problem? Because effectively, that's just not a technology problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, so which is what it is, right? So you'll have to connect these multiple banks that are out there. So today we have not worked on it, but obviously we have thought on it in-house. How do we solve for that, right? Mm. Like, is there are two ways to do it. The first way, ideally to do it, which obviously is a lot more challenging way, versus the second way, right? Which where the current system is where you change the, you know, bank accounts of sorts. The first way, the challenging one is that, can you connect you know, these four or five banks, just like how we connected the UPI system, right? Yeah. Everything that we do today, we think of UPI as an open rails. If you ask me, I would make Finsire as an open rail and give it out to the world, for, you know, to India for free. I need to realize that, is there a way that we can actually do this for lending, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have multiple banks on board, where these multiple banks speak to each other. If someone has taken an FD, you don't have to move that, you know, kind of FD account from an Axis to HDFC of sorts, where you can just talk, an Axis can talk to HDFC's, you know, kind of FD. And I can take a credit from that. And obviously, HDFC gets some sort of a commission for that. Right, for letting this happen.
But you know, like when it comes to such base infra, one often kind of thinks that a centralized authority like the government will kind of... I mean, UPI effectively was a quasi-government initiative only, right? And when it comes to, you know, credit enablement, like we keep on hearing of, you know, open credit enablement network, account aggregation, they are again very, very... And I assume that a lot of these, the endpoint is to solve problems like what you are mentioning, right? I mean, effectively, like a consent-driven interbank system where, you know, I get full visibility into the assets of a borrower when I have to lend, and there is an information service provider in between, which interfaces and makes sure that, you know, privacy, data, etc. are secured on the way, right? So do you see that? I mean, do you even see this as a... I know you guys are not doing that right now. You guys are focusing on other asset pools. But do you even see that to be a problem which will be solved by the marketplace, or do you see that as a problem which would be solved more by, you know, the government and policymakers at the highest level?
If it has to be implemented at scale, obviously the policymakers will have to participate, right? Like, yeah, you know, the government coming in and would obviously help a lot. Mm-hmm. It all starts from there, right? Whatever they decide. But someone has to build this out to say that, you know, and account aggregator is an example of that. So the beauty about account aggregator is that you get to see the data, yeah, but you may not pledge it. So someone has to work around and do the pledging and de-pledging process. So eventually I will get to see the data.
But that kind of becomes a use case on top of the account aggregation framework, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So that's a use case on top of that. So I will just get to see, and which is what, even to be honest, even Finsire does a lot of that. Like, I will get to see a lot of data that you might hold across various accounts, right? Albeit I can actually also pull out the data from all these asset originators and depositories, so on and so forth. But it's only getting to see the data. That is, and I cannot pledge it beyond that. Right? The whole pledging and de-pledging of it is actually a different ballgame altogether.
Right. Yeah, understood. No, Arshan, now I just wanted to delve a bit deeper into two points. One is, you know, in terms of the staging of FinServe, where are you guys at, if you could give some sense? Secondly is, how does the business model or the, you know, revenue drivers kick in? Who's your customer? Is the customer, you know, lenders? Are they borrowers? And in terms of, I'm assuming it's the former rather than the latter. But in any case, how does the entire, is it like a SaaS-based model where for per transaction, you guys get a cut? Would be good to, you know, get some sense of it.
Sure. I mean, so we started this, you know, early last year. Right? Actually, you know, I quit my job as in, you know, 21 September, came back to India, you know, reconnected with two of my friends who pretty much I know for like about, you know, 17 years and two decades now. And then these, Subbu and I have known each other since grade one, since we went to the same school. Right. Rahul and I used to play a lot of football together growing up in Chennai. And so ideally, we started this. And when we started it off, we obviously had various thoughts of building that infra rails. We wanted to do a bunch of, you know, with respect to, say, earned income and add other assets to it as and when, because we thought we'd start low ticket and then eventually move on to high ticket. And then the low one is a lot more dynamic in nature to understand the problem, right? So obviously we are live with about, you know, 6,000 odd end customers. We have a bunch of banks, I mean, NBFCs on the lending rails of it. And, you know, there are a bunch of assets that, you know, are in the beta phase also in form of test, right? So at the moment, when you think of it, we are obviously, looking at, say, an earned income. We have about, you know, mutual fund stocks and life insurance that potentially the one that is actually digitized, right? The way we have structured ourselves is that obviously we want to, till the end of wherever or however far we can go, we think of making it a very an easy, free process for anyone to come and integrate. Right? So any sort of a business that eventually can come and integrate, that potentially has a bunch of customers out there, it should ideally be no hazard. We don't end up kind of, you know, charging that. We'll actually give it to you for free, because at the end of the day, you have the distribution, we'll have the innovation, and we kind of, you know, marry you of doing that. So we actually make it from the lender. We do make to take a commission from the lender directly. And we have a bunch of lenders that directly kind of help us out there. And that is not to stop that we cannot be the lender ourselves in the future. It's just if eventually we'd love to be at some point of time in future. But at the moment, the way we think of it is that when you get a lending license of sorts, right? Actually, two businesses now. It is the lending business and then the other one's the tech business. So the way we think of it now is that how can we scale as much as possible, integrate with these digital credit touch points, and in the one that I just said, the payments company was just an example. But there are various other use cases with various other companies that existingly have a loan book ready. If you go out there, integrate with that, and solve another problem for them through the collateralization of digital assets, and we make it free over there, and we only kind of, you know, make money from the lenders of doing this.
So is the idea here to kind of go to banks first, and they already have a customer base, some of them are borrowers, some of them are just depositors, document and digitize and aggregate their asset base? Is that like the is that the starting point for you guys, or you also go directly to consumers?
I mean, I don't think directly going to the consumers, for us at least, it actually, you know, makes sense. Only because the last decade or so in India, right, there are many companies that have actually, you know, kind of done exceedingly well in educating the customers as a loan app or as a credit app, or have basically built trust with the consumers. Now, if I go out there and try to do that from scratch, I'm going to burn a lot of money and say that, you know, you come to my application, do as a consumer of sorts. I think that is not a recipe that we are looking at. And I don't think that is a recipe for something like this. As this, the way we think of it is that we ideally have to go tie up with digital businesses, right? You know, it can be either likes of, say, Credibee, it can be likes of, say, Copay, it can be likes of, say, any sort of interaction where there's some form of credit also involved, right?
Consumer fintechs, maybe, right?
Not just fintech, can be any, almost any, and everything, right? Where you have a lot of interaction and they have a lot of distribution, right? And then eventually we do the rest for you in respect to the way we speak to the asset originators across various assets. We speak to the lenders directly, notify them of sorts, and then, you know, you just have to get a distribution and we'll play around and eventually give it to the end consumer who potentially needs it at that sort. The reason, so the way why we are doing this, actually very interesting. I mean, you know, I found it very shitty, to be honest, to actually go to different brokers and then take credit. Like, no one likes going to, say, Zerodha separately, a Grow separately, a Jar separately, a life insurance player separately, and taking credit separately for each of the assets that you may hold. And that is not cool. Why that's not cool? Because the ball is actually in the lender's court, right? The reason is that today, when you have single asset put out at different at one single entity or one single broker, your asset is actually a lot more volatile for the lender, right? Because it's a single asset, right? Yeah. And if it's a single asset, if it's a lot more volatile, they would offer you a lesser LTV. They would offer you a minimum sort of, you know, pledge that you need to do. They would offer you a slightly higher interest rate, and the loan duration will be in their terms, right? So they'll tell, okay, this is the loan duration. I cannot give you more than, you know, whatever, 12 months of sorts or 24 months of sorts. That's the max. Technically, while the loan duration can be perpetuity, because the asset is only going to, say, something like a life insurance, only going to grow until my maturity period, right? 10 years of sorts. So our thesis is that, can you club all of this together and the lender can see all of this? Instead of you going to multiple different brokers, can it be like you just showcasing all of your assets once across various brokers to this one particular lender? Lender sees all of this and you can directly, you know, and now the ball is actually in your court, right? Because before the ball was in his court, now the ball is in your court to say that, okay, fine, I have these assets worth of 50,000 across 10 brokers, which is, say, 5 lakhs. Now the LTV is actually, you know, I can actually say I want this much and you'd actually get that much. You can say that, you know, I want it for this duration because I have pledged so many assets. Now I'll actually get for this duration until that perpetuity of that. So shifting the ball towards the consumer's court through various channels like these.
It makes sense. And listen, you're obviously tying, I mean, sort of speaking with lenders eventually, right? NBFCs, like you said, CreditB as an example, guys like that. When you look at it from their standpoint, right, it makes sense in the sense that they have specialized and they've really done well on unsecured retail lending, right? Now, to sort of grow, I mean, secured lending becomes an option, right?
Yeah.
Through sort of using this infrastructure, they sort of go that way. And is there an angle of institutional lending? I mean, this is all retail focused when we're talking about mutual funds. I mean, in small SMEs also sort of hold on to portfolios. Is that sort of an angle that, I mean, your solution must be agnostic to that, right?
Yeah, it is. So, which is what it actually, you know, sometimes I also think in-house is that, you know, who all can it actually serve? It actually can serve all of them.
Yeah.
It can serve institutions, it can serve businesses, it can serve retail. As long as I can go latch on my APIs onto these end players out there, as long as they can find it very easy, as easy as kind of, you know, entering Google Pay and then, you know, kind of taking through credit through that. I mean, it should actually solve almost anything and everything. And it's not just even also, it's not to say that also say Indians living overseas and such, right? Even they have things across all different brokers, so on and so forth. I mean, eventually even that should get solved. Idea is that just democratizing it and ensuring the ball comes to your court for doing so.
Yeah. And how's the sort of, I mean, switching gears and looking more at the company level, like how sort of fundraising, I mean, what is the view there? Is it sort of to raise capital and sort of build on tech and sort of grow and try to get as many partnerships in place and sort of use that as your primary growth strategy?
I mean, interestingly, we've just closed our first round.
Good. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. News should be out very soon. I'm not going to spill any more beans. Otherwise, my PR agency blew me up. But yeah, we have... I mean, and backed by a few of the finest of the finest. So hopefully, you know, I actually feel that as a validation because of two things. One is, of course, if you have like great people backing you, and of course, if you have great kind of, those people give you, you know, turn out to be your customers as well. That's a super, right. So that's what is happening. And then, you know, hopefully we go out there, break some kind of legs and start dancing on it.
That's awesome. And I mean, I won't get into the size of the raise and valuations all that, but I would ask, what is the capital going to be primarily used for? Is it to sort of build more toward more tech, or is it sort of marketing it product around?
Sure. I mean, it is, since it's a very tech focused, tech heavy, it is going to be tech, right? I mean, okay. I would market it if we are a direct channel of consumer, you know, kind of facing sort of an application. We are not that. It is super, super tech heavy. It is going to only focus on tech, right? So team building is, of course, a good solid chunk of 30% that we think of. You know, although we are already somewhere about 10 odd guys full time working. Yeah. And the rest, 20-25% obviously is going to go, and we are actually cloud right now, remote, but obviously it's going to, you know, go in building the space that we want to work for, so on and so forth. And a bunch of it other is obviously going to go in directly integrating a lot with these asset originators and the tech involved with the asset originators of sorts, right? I mean, we are going to stop with these two. I mean, ideally, to understand Indian consumers is you know, we've understood that, you know, some might actually do mutual fund stocks, but some customers will actually do life insurance. So actually building life insurance rails also for something like that, and then giving them a gamut of assets that they can probably pledge on is actually a big challenge. That eventually goes on in developing more rails with these asset originators of sorts. So portion of it actually would go in realizing that tomorrow, you know, if you have an HDFC life insurance, which many obviously in the country do have, you know, how can you kind of pledge that? And that actually is a function of how the banks or say HDFC Life would go on building this rail. So, you know, us going and, you know, kind of helping and building it out with them, and takes a lot of cost on that as well.
Yeah, no, very interesting. Way back, we had Madhusudan from M2P FinTech on the show as well. And the reason sort of, I mean, there is some infrastructure parallels there as well. So
Madhu's the OG of this. So I mean, I'll, you know, we can probably know that, but yeah, Madhu, they are also kind of coming and participating. So they are our mentors, essentially. I would probably say that I'll go to that extent also. So Madhu, Prabhu, all of them are like super nice, super fascinating. Yeah. Guys. I've learned a lot.
And Chennai guys as well, right? So there's some.
Yeah. I mean, so the Chennai and infra has got its own flavor. You know, yeah. Probably think that, you know, Bangalore has been this consumer facing, you know, go out there, you know, sell. You know, Mumbai has got its own flavor, but Chennai actually has got its own flavor of infra. I mean, that's what you're seeing. The way that, and rightly so, because it has the most number of NBFCs in the country, right? The way it is that, and you've seen these NBFCs function, right, of giving credit. We've seen the cycles of NBFCs of going, you know, up and down in terms of credit. Credit is not an easy business when you get into unsecured sort of, kind of, right? It gets a lot more challenging. But of course, having seen that, we've realized that if something could solve that, at ease, it's actually tech. Which is why I do see this flavor of infra coming in a lot more in Chennai as compared to other sort of, you know, cities across India.
Well, Shens, I was just, very curious to also understand that obviously, you know, for a place such as yours, lenders have their own, you know, level of importance in terms of obviously being the supply of capital plus having the customer part, you know, controlling distribution. But there is that entire asset originator, as you yourself had, you know, mentioned, which are mainly, you know, different, I would say, repositories all over the spectrum, you know, adding a title to that asset, right? And a product such as yours, when it comes to, you know, the pledging and the depledging element, it has to be done in a manner which is legally enforceable, right? So from that standpoint, like when it comes to the asset originator end of the equation, do you piggyback on the lender because they already have an access and relationship to them, or do you yourself also have a direct line with the originator?
Sure. So it actually so that's not even FinCert company. It's not just building a tech rail to it. It also ensuring and giving this comfort to the lender that we are going to pledge and depledge for you, right? With the asset. So
you do it end to end.
Yes. So our API is basically, you know, a bunch of it, right? Like one is the asset identification, asset verification, asset pledging, asset depledging of sorts, and then, you know, kind of flushing the loan out and, you know, ensuring that the loan comes as EMI again. So there are a bunch of APIs that actually go through.
Right.
And asset pledging and depledging, of course, is probably the most important thing in something like this. Right. Otherwise, it's an unsecured loan. As I jokingly say this, it means that if you don't pledge or depledge the asset, it actually means that I'm giving you a fake RC book and I'm taking this car that I've given you and I'm going on to the Himalayas.
Yeah.
it's basically that.
Yeah.
Right. So essentially, pledging and depledging is like the biggest that we have to offer to the lenders. That's why lenders are basically, you know, kind of are comfortable, super comfortable with something like this, right? So, and this involves a lot of these APIs that essentially talk to various asset originators or repositories that you can call it, and, you know, be it different kinds of forms of assets of sorts, which is where it will obviously, as we scale and as we look at assets, this is where the main...
That's your starting point, right? And that's the core offering, the way it comes out. And how has it been working with core banking systems within large banks? Just kidding. I'm sure it's been a lot of fun.
So when I actually started it, right, we did this with a lot of banks. We how can we, you know, kind of turn on the banks and say that, you know, will it excite you for doing something of that sort, right? Too naive to understand then that, you know, no banks actually were turned on because they're like, you know, you're too small for us.
Yeah.
It actually true as well, right? Our loan book is not all that big. No lender also was actually turned on only because of the fact that, you know, we were just starting off, termed as these new kids on the block. He just probably not lived 7 years overseas, come back, and you know, what does he know about the Indian system? And that was the thought, and rightly so. So we actually had to flush our own capital to realize that something like this would work with a small subset of people that we knew, right? To see the whole testing of it,
right?
Which obviously worked well. And then, you know, a few lenders got, kind of initiated. The things with banks is that, albeit, you know, they're very beautifully structured, they have their own things. The problem is that they're not obviously fast, right? And as a startup, as a kid...
I love the positive spin.
I wouldn't say they're beautifully structured, but yes.
Very positive, I must say. What did you eat in the morning? I'm just.
Hopefully some banker listens to it and says I'm a good boy, and then eventually kind of takes the deal of it.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, you know, this is what it is. They are structured in that way. They have a different DNA. Have a different DNA.
That's a nice way.
The way they want to move super, super fast, the way they want to move, you know, in their own kind of, you know, pace of sorts.
Mm.
So the idea is to eventually get decently or fairly big that, you know, eventually they can, you know, see that, okay, these people are going to bring us enough revenues and then come to us. Right. Albeit I do have a lot of banking folks that I speak, get connected to almost every time. And these are all heads of various banks. Right? But the idea is that it should make sense, business sense for them also.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Which is why a few NBFCs and getting them on actually is a lot more sense, because even they are as hungry as it can get.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of more flexible, right? I mean, these big banks are like big ships to turn, right? I mean, it takes ages and ages to turn.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and you don't want to actually. This is a good learning, and this is for anyone who's actually just starting off to understand that never, ever, when you're just starting off, think that you can probably change the world and get the bankers on you.
Yeah.
Right? We wasted a bunch of time in that, but I quickly realized that no, we cannot be wasting more time on this, and then quickly turned on to a few NBFCs who are very flexible and as hungry. I mean, the main in business actually is that, you know, if you are hungry, you likely want someone who's as hungry as you.
Yeah.
We have starved enough. If that dude is starving enough, then get him on board. You'll see the work getting done in no time, right? Banks, they do eat a lot, and they're not hungry.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. So, and, you know, on another, like, a funny anecdote, you know, every time Madhu has come on our show, in the interim period, he has raised a fair bit of capital, you know. So I don't know if he has. We never got a check, but
is that a good sign? Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully, hopefully, even we are in that process that eventually, you know, we are finally going to, you know, going to kind of, you know, tell that, you know, we have already kind of, you know, done it of sorts. But obviously, it took us some time, and also we are. The joke of money in this phase, when, you know, everyone's talking that winter is here. I'm like, your boss, we are very sorted at this level. At the, you know, we've managed to do this. It's also because there's a lot of conviction that we've actually showed in those phases where the market was down. Right? Like, I should you not. I still have my student loan, and I still had saved up some amount of money. And this is a course of last whatever years, right? 5-7 years, me working overseas. Always I knew at some point of time we're going to do something, right? So might as well. And we shouldn't be at that point of time. We go kind of, you know, only if we get capital, we'll ever run the show.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been running the show for 1.5 years without external capital. We have about, you know, 10 full-time, 4 interns, totally 14 of us not taking salary. And then eventually running the show and having customers, building businesses around and integrating. It's obviously to say that we were prepared for something like this without external capital coming in anytime soon. And which is what the external capital, you know, givers also realized, that, you know, these people, if they could do it with you know, not taking it and bootstrapping it for so long, I'm sure, you know, that's a testament to what we had kind of, you know, put ourselves through for some time.
Right. One thing, Shayans, I would like to ask is, who do you see as a peer or a competitor? It may not be even an Indian or a domestic player, maybe anywhere.
So, I mean, the beauty of this is that there's so many assets that we have to look out for, right? Like, I mean,
or maybe a good way to look at it is, which is a company you aspire to be like, you know, which is a company you really admire, you think, within your domain, you know?
Sure. I mean, a bunch of companies, right? Like, you know, Stripe is one of them that has done really well, exceedingly well globally. But in the payment space, right, they've solved a very beautiful thing. M2P, they have done a very beautiful job. I'm actually very, very close to, like I said, right, like the last set. So essentially, you know, what they have done also, they've done a lot of waiting game, kind of a lot of sacrifices together. So, I mean, I'm sure we also do think that over a period of time in this space, we'd want to get that, but have this for a very different sort of an asset class that we think potentially can also kind of crack or make a dent in the ecosystem, only because of the fact that still 70% or 75% of lending happens to secured lending in terms of the total value.
Right.
Like say a house loan value would be supremely high. Right? So in terms of total value, it's still secure lending that essentially is the backbone of the economy.
Right.
I mean, yeah, there are, these two companies that I can obviously think of in the core infra space that eventually kind of has done exceedingly well has decided to take the back seat, right? And why I say the backseat only because of the fact that, you know, they obviously, both of them would have had a choice at a given point of time to go consumer first and then take the fame and then eventually change the consumer mindset. I mean, they have said that, you know, we are going to build it for the other entities that eventually take the whole consumer face and then, you know, kind of become a brand themselves of that sort. They are actually become a brand in the developer community or the banking community or the finance community. In a very business-driven community. Right. So, I mean, these two are surely one of them that eventually we look up to a lot.
Well, fascinating chat, and it was really nice to hear about the business because it's sort of tech-forward and in the fintech space and a sector that we now are experts
in. We are experts in that.
Congratulations on the raise again. I mean, you know, after you sort of...
It's still a secret, right? I'm just telling it out there. It comes out, it comes out, but it's still a secret, but hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's no amount, no valuation. Nothing has been discussed here except the fact that you guys are doing well. And yeah, it was a productive chat, no? It was good to sort of catch up, and that sort of... I think we've spent like almost close to an hour, so very fruitful and encouraging chat.
Super, yeah. Super, Nikhil. Super, Shah. Yeah, I mean, if you ever thought that this is super helpful in terms of understanding lending of sorts, I'd be more than happy to answer any sort of other questions if any one of your, you know, listeners do have with respect to it. Because, I mean, this, I do think of it even in my dreams now. So I do get a narrated, okay, this is how we have to do it and this is how we build. I think these are just signs of building an early company of sorts. But yeah, this is how I think. Super. Thank you.
Awesome. No, so Shayan, thank you so much for your time, and all the listeners, do feel free to, you know, drop in any questions or queries. And also, if there are any fund managers or entrepreneurs who would like to come on Transfin Long Shots, would love to host you and have a super interesting chat. And all the best to you, Shayan. We'll definitely keep track and wish you all the best. And this is Nikhil Arora, and I have with me Sharad Tuparon signing off.